Pettersson. Elias Pettersson scores! Kachuk scores! Matthew Kachuk! What a goal!
You're listening to...
Another chance! Great save by Markstrom!
Here's Kachuk. Oh, what a save by Demko!
Rintoul and Sermon.
What's going on? How's your Thursday? I'm Scott Rintoul. She's Karen Sermon. I wonder what we'll talk about today.
I don't know, Scott. Talk about the Flames losing to Winnipeg last night, or the fact Montreal lost to Ottawa. Those are good talking points, right? Those were the stories out of yesterday.
Adam Lowry, that's what everybody wants to talk about. He played well last night. Looked good,
he
man.
He did, actually. Yeah, he looked really good.
Shows how important he is to that lineup. But yeah, we're not going to start there. We don't expect you to either. 960, 960, or 650. 650. It has been a talking point since Monday. It's Thursday. The story has taken a lot of different twists and turns, and we will get into the latest one, and it brings up a conversation that has been had time and time again with hockey fans, whether you're a newer hockey fan or an older hockey fan, where you want the game to go. There is no way, Karen, that we currently have to measure the volume of emotion that's present at any given time. But it felt like there was more than enough to fill every available particle last night at MSG. It was flowing out of that opened wound on the Rangers' soul in the wake of Tom Wilson and the incident from Monday night. It was oozing out of the entire Rangers' hockey operations department after the shocking firings of John Davidson and Jeff Gordon just a few hours before the game. And it was visible on the helmets and on the faces of the Washington Capitals as their teammate TJ Oshie returned to the lineup just a couple of days after losing his father, to play in what was already going to be an emotion-filled affair. There were so many feelings heading into this game.
Feelings, Scott. I like this. It seems like I need to sit down and talk to a therapist today to explain all the feelings that came out of that game last night. Here's the thing. You knew something was going to happen. I said... We've talked about it for a couple of days. We said, Scott, there's going to be emotion. You talked about how much there was last night. It was not unexpected. I don't know if a line brawl off the top was expected, but I had a feeling that this was going to be all eyes on must-see TV to see how the Rangers would handle the non-suspension of Tom Wilson. And I don't know if they did exactly what I expected them to do, but I knew something was going to happen. So I made sure 4:05 I had the game on, was watching it, because something was going to go down, and it sure did.
I don't feel the need to say I was right on this, because I didn't think I'd see as much as I did last night. I really didn't, and I'm not alone. People from around the hockey world went, what's really going to happen here? It's a different league now. Who's big enough? Who's strong enough? Who's powerful enough to take on Tom Wilson? Is anything going to come of this? Chances were somebody was going to step up there. I didn't expect a line brawl off the start. I didn't expect 100 penalty minutes. That's how many were handed out in the first period of last night's punch-up at MSG. Six fights in the first 5 minutes. And if you're wondering whether or not that's a lot, according to Sportsnet stats, that is the first time in NHL history that a game has featured that many fights in the first 5 minutes, regular season or playoffs. So, yeah, that's a lot of fights in the early going of the game, and one of them actually involved Tom Wilson.
It did, of course. We get that line brawl off the top, Scott. And you knew something was going down. They were talking because you saw the referee before he dropped the puck kind of push the two guys away. But as soon as he dropped it, it was all systems go. All forwards were fighting. Surprisingly, no one fought Zdeno Chara to start the game. And I say that very sarcastically, Scott. I don't think anyone wants to take on Big Z there. But no, I didn't expect the line brawl. I expected... What happened, though, when Tom Wilson stepped on the ice for the first time? I really did think that something was going to happen the first time he touched the puck, and it did, and good on Brendan Smith for answering the call there. He didn't look like he necessarily wanted to be in the fight, but he stood up and knew he was probably out of his weight class, but hey, good on him.
I don't know. He initiated it. Brendan Smith challenged Tom Wilson. He threw his gloves off, and he wasn't waiting for an invitation. He grabbed Wilson. He got in what he could before doing his best to limit the damage from Wilson. That's a guy that he's given up 20 pounds and a couple of inches to. Certainly a lot closer in size than Artemi Panarin and Tom Wilson, hearkening back to Monday. That's another thing that stood out off the opening faceoff. The guys who decided to throw down their gloves, all of the forwards, they were all in the same weight class. They were all about the same. In fact, one of the three fights featured a situation where a player was down, more damage could have been inflicted, but it wasn't really about that at the time. Now, that's not all that happened last night, but let's at least start there. Brendan Smith, he's the guy who said, it's on me. I'm the guy who needs to challenge Tom Wilson. Here's what he had to say about that decision after the game.
Obviously, you guys watched what happened. the game before. I don't really want to touch on it too much. I think it's been exhausted already, but I think that I had no beef with anybody else on their team. I thought that it should have been handled before this game, and it wasn't. So, unfortunately, it had to be kind of on my shoulders, and I thought I took it.
Should have been taken care of before the game. They didn't take care of it. I felt I needed to do something. He used the word unfortunately there. There's a lot that's happened since Monday. There's the non-suspension that you referenced. There's the fact that this team went out and put out a massive statement. We haven't even gotten to the firings yet, but we do have some news on the statement, Karen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no surprise here. The New York Rangers have been fined $250,000 for their public comments on Tuesday. Here's the quote from Commissioner Gary Bettman. Public comments of the nature issued by the Rangers that were personal in nature and demeaning of a league executive will not be tolerated. While we do not expect our clubs to agree with every decision rendered by the Department of Player Safety, the extent to which the Rangers expressed their disagreement was unacceptable. It is terribly unfair to question George Parris's professionalism and dedication to his role and the Department of Player Safety, end quote. So, James Dolan is $250,000 lighter in the pocket today, Scott. I don't think he probably cares because I think he probably feels that it was necessary, at least in his point of view. But yes, that's what's coming out today.
So we're not surprised, but we have a number. Was it going to be $100,000? No, it's $250,000. Again, James Dolan, he's not that worried. He was going to pay whatever fine they sent his way. There's so much more to talk about than that actual number, but that's the news that has just come out in the last few minutes. So we do have a number that's attached to it. All right. It's the fighting. And the first text we get here is, there was nothing wrong with it. That's hockey. If you don't like it, change the channel. Guarantee people turned on that game to see what happened. That's from Grammy. Pardon me. I think I pronounced your name wrong. That's one side of this, and it's difficult to argue against that people tuned in to see what was going to happen last night. Does that mean you want every single game to look like that? Do you want that to be representative of your sport? And it's a really difficult conversation because there are slices of hypocrisy in it from myself as well, Karen. I don't want every game to look like what I saw last night. I don't. Was I offended by it? Nope, I wasn't. I wasn't offended by it. There was a point where I wondered if they were actually going to play hockey. They did, and the hockey was eh. And there's a great story attached to the actual hockey that occurred and the scoring that occurred, and that involves TJ Oshie, and we will get to that this segment. But I don't want every game to look like that, and I'm not sure if every game looks like that if all of a sudden more people are going to tune into every single hockey game. It's the fact that this was unique to me that caused those eyeballs to go toward that game.
Yeah, I mean, Scott, I think you and I have completely, I think most of our listeners know that neither of us want fighting out of hockey. I actually enjoy fighting hockey in its certain context. And last night, I mean, because we knew what didn't happen with Tom Wilson and because I wanted to see what would happen to Tom Wilson and the response by the New York Rangers, I tuned in. I was on the edge of my seat and I took a video of it when it first happened. I was like, yeah, this is what happens when the league doesn't settle it or do the right thing and you get a brouhaha like this. I saw people tweeting about it, Scott, good or bad, that I have never seen. Like Pat McAfee was doing basically a Twitter timeline and commenting on it. He loved it, but it was sarcastic in a way, but it was like, okay, he's an NFL guy. I don't know what his knowledge or excitement for the NHL is. Cousin Sal, if people know that name, he's part of the Ringer podcast network. Bill Simmons, he's also part of the Jimmy Kimmel show. Like, he was tweeting, every hockey game should start like this. Now, no, I don't agree with that. But again, it's people were putting eyes on the product, Scott. It was a big national game on NBC. They had it across their platform. So I think it put the NHL in a spotlight for a moment, but again, I don't want to see that night in, night out. I don't think it's good for the league to have this night in and night out.
Elliot in Ladner texts in, I know the two of you don't think fighting needs to be part of the game anymore. We haven't actually weighed in on this, but we will tell you our thoughts in a moment, Elliot. We'll continue with your text. I, for one, thoroughly enjoyed the brouhahas, the players policed the war, and now it's over. I disagree with that as well. Exciting it was. Surely ratings will show fighting belongs. Hockey is a unique sport. Doesn't need to be like other mainstreams. That's from Elliot. Yep, they might have great ratings from last night. The World Juniors gets great ratings every year. There's no fights in those games, and yet we seem to enjoy that brand of hockey as well. It's a gold medal game. The stakes are higher. Skill level at its highest for that age level. You can't get that every single game. I wish we could. We don't get that every single game. But we can make the comparison that the skill game draws eyeballs as well. Mm-hmm. The question is, where do we want this to go? That's the bigger question here. We haven't weighed in on fighting, whether it belongs in the game, what element it serves in the game. Karen, where are you at on that?
Again, I am okay for fighting. I don't want it to go back to the 80s or anything like that, or the 70s, whatever the case may be. I like the skill in the game right now, Scott, but I do understand that at times emotions run high. I do understand there might be some questionable hits on players in the run of play. And I do feel that maybe someone needs to step in. Was I a fan of the Wayne Simmonds on Alex Edler? No, I wasn't. I thought that was ridiculous because I thought Alex Edler served his suspension. He served his purpose. Did I enjoy what I saw last night? I mean, kind of did. And that maybe makes me hypocritical. But it was like, it was interesting to see. And I wanted to see what would happen. And I didn't have anything against, you know, these guys in a line brawl. I don't have anything against guys that are the same weight class going against each other. But again, I want it to naturally happen within a game, Scott. I don't want it to become a part of every game.
Okay, so here's where we get to the crux of the matter. Naturally happening within the course of game. Organic. Those who are on the pro fighting side, those who are on the non-fighting side, that's one point they can kind of agree on. Look, the fights that develop out of actual anger or incidents on the ice that don't go to the extent of Tom Wilson, yeah, those are the ones that are certainly more enjoyable than staged fighting. I think most people agree. There's very few people anymore who want staged fighting. So then you get to this conversation about banning fighting, which I sort of roll my eyes at, because people seem to think that if the NHL took further punitive measures against fighting in the game, bare knuckle boxing on ice, that all of a sudden there wouldn't be any fights. Oh, I think there'd still be fights. I do.
The emotions run high.
Do you know why I think there'd still be fights?
Why?
Because I watch football, I watch baseball, I watch basketball. You know what happens every once in a while in those other sports? Somebody fights. Now, it seems pretty counterproductive in football where you're wearing helmets and all those pads, but every once in a while, emotions boil to a point in a very physical game where people fight, and those are organic. And you know what happens to those players at the time? They just don't play for the rest of the game. In very rare cases, they don't play the next week. But most of the time, you're not allowed to fight, hit the showers, which is kind of what happened to Tom Wilson last night. Now, Tom Wilson stayed out there for longer. He had his fight with Brendan Smith. He eventually kind of almost got into something with Buchnevich, a guy we'll get to in just a minute. He's got a hearing coming up today, and so he should. Mm-hmm. And eventually they gave Tom Wilson a misconduct. It was just a 10-minute misconduct at the time. And then the Washington Capitals, you cannot convince me that Tom Wilson was so injured he couldn't play anymore in that game.
Oh.
They went to Tom Wilson in the intermission and said, it's probably best that you don't play anymore here tonight. That's what's probably best for this. I believe if you said, if you fight, you're out for the night, I still think we'd see fights every once in a while. I do think we wouldn't see them as often, and there are people who are going to argue against that. But there are times where somebody's just not going to care because they're so heated up. It's those organic fights you talk about, Karen. They're going to throw down their gloves.
Yeah, and especially, you know, in situations where it's a playoff chase or just the emotions of the games in general run high, and it could be a rivalry like the Battle of Alberta, or you see the Islanders versus the Rangers, situations like that, Philly, Pittsburgh. I think there's always going to be emotions that come out of players that look at Sidney Crosby and Thomas Konecny the other night, Scott. I mean, this is Sidney Crosby, one of the best players of the game, but again, he was pissed off and they got into a wrestling match, and maybe he took it a little far by pushing his head into the ice. But again, like, these are two guys that basically agreed to go at it one another, so I'm fine with that. It's more of the, I don't like the way that Wilson, it's just, I don't like the way how any of this went down, Scott. And I think it could have been completely, like, we wouldn't have had anything happen last night. Maybe we would have, like, maybe someone would have still gone after Tom Wilson, but I don't think you would have seen, what is 180 total penalty minutes in a game if they had just suspended Tom Wilson. And so I just think that I like fighting in hockey. I think there is a time and a place for it. I just think that a situation like last night didn't need to happen. And I think we need to put the focus back on what Department of Player Safety can and can't do or doesn't do in terms of keeping their players safe.
Tom Wilson. Yeah, that's what's at the heart of this, because I agree with you. I think we would have seen something last night, maybe not the volume of fights, but had he been suspended, I don't think we would have seen everything we saw last night. I do think that the next time Tom Wilson was on the ice against the New York Rangers, and I do think that the first time he plays the New York Rangers next season, you're going to see something again. Like, the people who think this is over, we've got text saying the opposite. Hey, this isn't done. Tom Wilson put a target on his back. This is going to happen again. I agree with that. Because you know what's going to happen the next time the Rangers play the Washington Capitals? Artemi Panarin's going to be a part of that game, which he wasn't able to be last night. You see him limping on the ice for the shirts off our back night, like the jerseys off our back.
I didn't.
He was in the building, and he obviously does have a lower body injury. He was limping across the ice to be a part of that. He's going to be on the ice, and there's going to be a conversation leading up to that game of, okay, our guy's back now. We need to show him that Tom Wilson – this still isn't done. Like, it's going to happen again, and maybe the Rangers alter their roster, and maybe there's something to the fact that James Dolan didn't like the makeup of the roster overall, didn't like the look of his team that some were calling soft heading into Wednesday's game. Like, there's still more here. We're not done unpacking this thing completely.
Well, no, and Scott, someone texted in, I didn't see this. George LaRocque apparently tweeted out, he says the Rangers can give him a one-game contract and he would take care of Wilson. I don't want any situations like that, but again, maybe Chris Drury, of course, the new general manager, goes out and gets someone that is a Tom Wilson type, if you can find someone like him. But again, I don't think it's over in the sense that, like, Pavel Buzhnevich is having a hearing with the league today. Like, he was fighting. He was itching for something to happen last night, Scott. He got two minor penalties before he got the major that got kicked out of the game. Like, what is it? He high-sticked Chara. He also slashed somebody else, I believe. So, I mean, he was just fighting. Or just not fighting, sorry. He was itching to do something. And then he goes and he had enough with Anthony Mantha. He ran him. Mantha didn't like that. Mantha's sticking him in the back of the shins. And then Buzhnevich goes back and cross-checks him in the face. It's a penalty. It's a suspension. I think that's deserved. But again, this just adds to the narrative of what could happen next time, because now you've got the Pavel Buzhnevich on Anthony Mantha situation as well.
So that's the thing I don't think happens last night. I'm in agreement with you there. I think we still see some fights last night if Tom Wilson's suspended. Maybe not as many. I don't think we see the Buzhnevich engine, because I watched him early in that game. You just outlined it. From the get-go, he was focused on one thing, and it wasn't hockey. You had a player who felt the league did not take care of him. You had a player who went, well, if the justice system isn't going to help me, I guess I'm going to have to do something about it. And he was just seeing red. He was looking for something all game. Now, Chara tried to warn him early in the game, because Buzhnevich went over and took a whack at Tom Wilson. And Chara, in that sense, was like, dude, don't do this to yourself. Don't bite off more than you can chew here. And it was less to do with Mantha than it was just somebody at that point in time. And he should get suspended. He should get suspended for a cross-check to the face, because that's what he did last night. And there are going to be people who say, well, how do you suspend Buzhnevich? Well, easy, because you don't want cross-checking to the face in your game. But that right there is the incident you could have prevented. That's
exactly
the one. That's the one right there.
So how does Department of Player Safety get off, Scott, with this, with not a, I guess, perception now of, is there really a Department of Player Safety? Like, who are we protecting? Are we protecting the instigator? Or are we protecting the actual victim in some sort of these situations? Like, this is what I don't get with all of this, is that if the Department of Player Safety had done their job originally, and that was suspend Tom Wilson, yeah, there may have been some sort of more heightened emotion in this game. But one, Wilson wouldn't have been on the ice, Scott, and Buzhnevich wouldn't have done what he had done. And he's going to now pay the price for it. And he probably thinks it's well worth it in terms of, you know, getting retribution for what happened with Tom Wilson and him not being suspended. But where is the accountability for the league and the Department of Player Safety and George Parros? They aren't going to be held accountable for this.
So this text comes in. If you honestly say no fighting in hockey, you're going to see an increase in dirty, ugly hits because of the emotions they're not allowed to let loose with fighting. I personally deconstruct that argument with, they'll still fight in those cases because they'll feel it's worth it. They'll feel it's worth it. They'll be riled up in the moment and say, you know what, you can't do that to your guy, and if it means I don't play the rest of this game, I don't care, because you're not allowed to do that to our player. That's my personal belief. I know many will argue against it, but if you just said you're hitting the showers early, there'll be guys who go, Okay. I guess I'll hit the showers early tonight because to me, it's worth defending my guy.
And the NHL has already done, Scott. They've put rules in place to decrease fighting in hockey. There's the instigator penalty. There's a third man in. There's all these things that they have already tried to do. But if emotions run high and there's two guys that are willing to go, I am okay with that. And you're going to put them in the box. You're going to give them a 10-minute major. Sometimes they'll, you know, sometimes it leads to a misconduct, game misconduct, whatever the case may be. But I just think taking it fully out of the game and banning it is just going to lead to situations that the NHL is probably not going to know how to handle. And that's uglier hits. And then how do they handle fighting on a retribution on that? So I think you have to keep it in the game to a point.
So you want it somewhat legal. You don't want to say hit the showers early. Like there is a penalty in place. All I'm saying, in my personal view, I want that penalty to be a little stiffer.
Okay. I just think if it's a situation where it's two guys willing to go, I'm okay with that. I just don't want it to be, you know, every night. And I hate the stage fight. So when I say two guys willing to go, I hate the stage fights. I do. Like, that to me, that's stupid. Like, really? Like, do we need to see that in hockey? But if it is in the run of the play and there's a scrum and motions just get high, if it's fair and there's no, you know, throwing some guy down to the ice, punching him with your glove fist while he's on the ice, then picking him back up and ragdolling him again, trying to put his head into the ice, as long as that's not in the game, because that is dirty, then I'm okay.
Someone else says, with what we know about CTE and concussions, is there a place for fighting in the NHL? It's a very fair question. I'm on that side of things as well. And I grew up in a time, I'll use the football comparison again, where safeties could take people's heads off. That's what you did. That's what the Ronnie Lotz and Steve Atwater of the world, that's what they used to do. Well, now you say that, Karen, but when you were growing up and watching it, it was great. You loved it because that was what you thought was the accepted means of play. You thought, hey, if you go across the middle, you got to be watching for that because that's what football is. And eventually they said, we can't have this. And part of it was legal because of CTE and concussions. And then the other part was, we can't afford to lose star players to things like this. So now we still see head hits every once in a while. We still see a safety try to decapitate somebody every once in a while, but there are punitive measures in place, so it happens far less frequently.
Who was it, Scott, for? Was it your GM, John Lynch, safety for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
He used to take the Broncos.
You know, he used to take people. And I think back, like, I'm kind of laughing at it. I don't mean it in a way that, because I enjoyed it, but I think back then I probably was like, whoo, this guy got laid out. He laid down a hit. Now I look at that, Scott, and I go, oh my God, that poor guy. Is he going to have a concussion? What's going to happen to him? So again, it is a very different situation from, because of what we do know about head injuries, my opinion on this topic has changed definitely from back in the 90s, early 2000s to now.
Keep those texts coming in. A couple of quick ones. Puff says, personally, I think fights do belong in hockey, but smart ones. This was entertaining. It was great to watch, but this kind of fight doesn't need to happen every game. This was an unusual extreme. Last one we'll get in before the end of this segment. I do not understand why this is so hard for the league or the hockey public to understand. Fighting, you get kicked out of the game immediately. If it's worth the fight, then the fight still happens, but take the repercussions just like in rugby. Someone's using a different physical sport. It's a red card. People get hit all the time. People get mad all the time, but they select moments when a fight is warranted. That's more my feel on it. And obviously I've changed since my childhood and learning stuff along the way, and I look at it much differently today than I certainly did back then. We want your opinion on this, 960, 960, or 650, 650. We had all this audio built into the first segment. We're going to get to this. We'll get to TJ Oshie. We're going to have to get to it a little later on because we've got a blue liner from the Colorado Avalanche standing by. Devon Toews, he got traded in the offseason. It was a big deal, and he's turned into an even bigger deal in Colorado. We'll talk about it next with the Avs blue liner right here on Rintoul and Sermon. Devon Toews of the Colorado Avalanche set to join us here. Chances are with the Avs that he's coming off a win. This is the rare occurrence where he's not. Colorado actually had a lead last night. San Jose came back, won that game, prevented the Avs from getting a little bit closer, or at least keeping pace, I suppose, with the Vegas Golden Knights, who were victorious last night. That division's still up for grabs. That's a little bit of separation last night with very few games remaining. Vegas at 76 points. Colorado 4 points back with 72. Minnesota 5 points back. Still possible for any of those three teams to win the division. Colorado has a really favorable schedule down the stretch, but as proven last night, not every single game is going to be a rollover just because it looks like it in the standings.
Yeah, Scott, I think what we've seen, Scott, down the stretch, and you're seeing it from teams like Buffalo, you saw it from Philly. I know they just got their butts handed to them from Pittsburgh in their last game, but again, they kind of gave it to Pittsburgh the game before. I think what you're going to see is some of the teams that are out of it, and maybe not so much up here north of the border with, say, the Canucks, but in terms of them not giving up on the season, Scott, I still think you're going to see a lot of competitive games. No game's going to be a really easy out in terms of down the stretch. But yeah, like you said, Colorado's got four games to go against, two games against LA, then a game against Vegas. And who knows what that game could mean, Scott. Of course, that could be maybe for first place at this point in the season. And then they've got two games at home against Los Angeles, rounding out the season. So four against LA and then one against Vegas. So like you said, a favorable schedule, but that I'm sure they've got that Vegas game marked on their calendars.
Keep those texts coming in. We will get to them. We know what the main topic of the day is. In fact, we didn't even get to some of our audio. Chris Drury has spoken again this morning as well. Yesterday, during the course of our show, New York Rangers fire their president, fire their general manager. Chris Drury ends up assuming both jobs. He's had his presser this morning, so we'll get some audio for you there.
Yeah.
And yes, we will get your reaction to what happened last night in New York, where we're at with fighting, where you want the game to go. There are some that want to see more of what they saw last night. I don't count myself on that side. It was unique. I don't want to see that for most games in the National Hockey League. It happens every once in a while. I'm not against emotion, and there is a hypocrisy, I believe, in these conversations. It's a shade of gray. It just depends which side of the spectrum you're on.
Yeah. I mean, my point of view, and people, listeners, know exactly where I've stood on this. I thought Tom Wilson should have been suspended. I thought it was a suspendable hit. I thought Department of Player Safety got it wrong. I figured something was going to happen last night. And you know what I was doing, Scott? I was tuned in and watching that game till about the middle of the second period because I had to go out. But it was like, this is what I wanted to do, to see what was going to happen. Because, and I was okay with it. I was okay with what I saw. So if that makes me a bit of a hypocrite, I guess that is. But at the same time, it was a spectacle in its own right. And I wanted to watch every second of it.
What part of the game are you looking to promote? What do you want the game to look like for newer audiences? There are those who are dyed-in-the-wool hockey fans, have been from the time they can remember watching the game, and they'll say, I want it to revert back. This is how I grew up. I don't want it to evolve. You made the point earlier, and it's a good one. The game has evolved. Like, fighting has reduced. There are some people who don't like that. There are others that believe it needs to go further still. I am on that side of things. But it's a very nuanced argument when you start getting down to the finer strokes of what the league should look like when it puts forth its mandate. Devon Toews plays the game at the highest level. He is an Abbotsford product, traded in the offseason. That's the last time we spoke to him, and now things are going pretty well with the Colorado Avalanche. He joins us from California today. Devon, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We are well, and thanks for taking the time. As I just mentioned, the last time we spoke, it was just after you got traded in the offseason. You'd just been married as well. What's your first season with the Avs been like?
It's been awesome. The city of Denver's been fantastic to my wife and I. The people have been so friendly, and they're such a great fan base, such a great organization. So the whole transition there has been very smooth.
What's it been like for you and your wife trying to adjust to a brand new city amidst a pandemic where things are a little bit different and people, you know, not now perhaps because things are different in the States, but for the most part haven't been able to congregate in the same way?
Yeah, it's been a little tough until, you know, I think the last 5, 6, 7 home games of the season we weren't allowed fans. So my wife wasn't able to meet any of the other wives and girlfriends or make any relationships there until later this year, and obviously restaurants and such have been closed, and we're doing our part to stay safe as well. So we're hoping, you know, things can slowly open up as everyone starts to get vaccinated and we can kind of explore the Denver area and Colorado a little bit more.
The rinks aren't full, but as you mentioned, fans have come back in U.S. arenas. How much of a difference did it make when you first got fans back in the building?
Yeah, I think we were in Arizona the first time we played with fans, and it was a difference. You know, there was just a little bit of a crowd murmur there that kind of kept you going a little bit more and just added a little bit of a different energy into the building. And obviously our fans at Ball Arena have been great this year, and I think we're around 4,000 right now. They've been loud and proud.
Devon, I don't know where you were in the offseason when you did get traded and when you got down to Colorado, but have you been up to Canada at all lately? Or not lately during the season, but were you able to get back to Canada?
No, I haven't been back in probably over a year and a half, almost 2 years now. My wife's from out east in New Jersey, so we spend a lot of the off season there, and then getting traded to Denver and the whole COVID situation, we haven't been able to get home. I know that's frustrating my parents and a lot of family and friends a little bit, but we're hoping, you know, once things open up, we can get up there.
I'm guessing a lot of FaceTimes?
Yeah, a lot of FaceTimes. Everyone wants to see the puppy. Everyone loves looking at him.
Oh, what kind of puppy do you have?
He's probably 8.5 months now. He's an English cream golden retriever.
Okay, so were you one of those people where you're like, okay, it's a pandemic and we can't really do anything, and so now is the perfect time to get a new puppy? Because I think that's what I saw. Everybody, like my friends, my Instagram friends, everybody got a puppy in the pandemic.
Yeah, we kind of just wanted one before it all started. We were just kind of waiting for the perfect time. We were in an apartment in New York, and it's not obviously the best situation to have a dog in. And then we ended up getting one right after we got married, and then got traded to Denver. So that was kind of a blessing. A lot more room for him to roam around. And he's made, I think, more friends than we have in Denver already. Every dog he sees, he likes to go play with.
That sounds exactly like a puppy. How has Denver and Colorado changed over the last couple of months now that vaccinations have been ramping up down there?
Things are opening up a little bit. As a team, I think we're still pretty safe. You know, nobody wants to mess with anything that we got going here, and we got a good thing going here coming into playoffs, and we feel good about our team. So everyone's trying to kind of bunker down still and stay safe. But the city itself is starting to get moving a little bit more. People are getting out, and obviously they can come to games and watch us, and the Rockies are in town. People are going to watch them too. So downtown is starting to buzz a little bit more.
Now, you had, I believe it's 4 players now that have been in the COVID protocol, all kind of lately, mm-hmm. individually, Bowen Byram, Philip Grubauer, now Devin Dubnyk, sorry, I can't remember the other person as well. And you did have to shut down for 5 days. What was that situation like for you guys?
I think that one was a little easier. Earlier in the year, we had to shut down for, I think, over a week, and that was a little bit of a tougher one, just because we felt like we were just getting into the flow of the season and starting to play well, and getting that break was a little bit more of a bummer. This last one, I think, kind of came as a little bit more of a blessing. I don't think we had a 2-day break since mid-February there, so we were going on 2 months without 2 days between a game, and we were starting to wear down a little bit. So that little break there, I think, kind of rejuvenated us a little bit. Unfortunate that a couple guys got sick, but we're thankful they're all healthy and safe and coming back for us now and playing well too. So, yeah, those breaks have been a little bit funny. We're just trying to get through them and make sure our guys are safe and healthy and their families are safe and healthy too. That's the other part of it is, you know, guys get COVID and then they go home and their families could potentially get it. So it's good that everybody's been safe so far.
That part we can all relate to, even though we're not National Hockey Leaguers. Devon Taves, Avs defenseman, having a great season, 7 goals, 18 assists. He joins us this morning on Rintoul and Sermon. I just mentioned those numbers. It's a new career high in goals. Pace-wise, you're certainly having your most productive season offensively. You're just 3 points off tying your career high in points. What about the style of the Avalanche has suited you so well?
Yeah, I think just the room to be creative within the structure, of course. And, you know, the players are so highly skilled on this team, and everybody kind of knows how to play with each other. So it was just about me coming in and finding my groove within that structure. And it's been fantastic. You know, I love playing with all 4 lines and all 60. It's, you know, some days it's a little bit of a blender, but it's fun that way. And we feel like we're skilled enough and smart enough to play with anyone and everyone on the ice. So, you know, we've had a great year, and we got, I think, 5 games left here to hopefully try to lock up first place.
You had a great year last year as well. You went to the Eastern Conference Final, but as you just alluded to, your old team, the Islanders, plays a far different style. It's somewhat ironic that the East, which is seen as much more wide open, you played on one of the more defensively tight teams out there. You come to the West, which is seen to be tighter, and you're playing on one of the more high-flying teams. As a player, is it liberating to play in a style like you're in right now?
I don't know. I like playing both styles, honestly. I like playing that defensive style that we played with Barry, and we made it work. And, you know, at the end of the day, winning's the most important thing and the fun part of the game. And we were able to do that in New York with that style. And we're able to play a little bit more of a high-flying style here in Colorado and win games too. So I think it all just comes down to the players being dedicated to the structure and what's put in front of them no matter who you have on the team and what skill level you have.
One thing you did not do with the Islanders was kill penalties, but you've been asked to this season. How has that allowed you to evolve as both a player, Devon, and as someone who's trying to assume a bigger role with a new team?
Yeah, I think you just have to kind of hone in on what players' tendencies are a little bit more. When you're on the penalty kill, it's, you know, you're down a man, so you have to think the game a little bit better and smarter and quicker too. And, you know, our PK has been quite good this year. I think we're top 10 of the league right now. So it's been nice to test myself against NHL competition on the penalty kill. I was penalty killer in college and in the American League, but never in the NHL. So it's been nice to kind of test out those skills and see what I can do there.
Devon, when you were with New York, you played with some highly skilled players as well. Of course, Matthew Barzal comes to mind, but you do get to play with Nate MacKinnon in Colorado. What is it like playing with him?
It's awesome. He's such a bright mind, and you know, everything on that line with him, Rantanen and Landeskog starts in our D zone. You know, getting pucks out and getting it to them with speed in the neutral zone is where we generate a lot of that offense. And then once you get in the zone, once you've kind of broken them down and get those guys moving and get them up top and shooting, it's just incredible to watch how shifty they are and the little puck plays they make. And you know, they're great teammates and they're great players, and they've been a big part of our success this year.
What makes Jared Bednar a successful NHL coach?
Just his coachability. I think he just gets across the players so well. You know, every player plays a different style and likes to be coached a certain way, but I think he caters to so many different players on our team, and we're such an easygoing group. I don't think it takes much, you know, sternness or anything like that to get us going. I think it's a group that really knows what we need to do to be successful. And he allows us to have those conversations in the room and within each other to kind of figure things out as we go too, while he gives us the structure pieces we need to be successful.
Devon Toews in conversation with us this morning on Rintoul and Sermon. You know what everybody's been talking about this week. We've been talking about it for 3 days. Our text inbox, as you can imagine, is just littered with people weighing in on what's happened with Tom Wilson, the Rangers, everything that happened last night. What's been the reaction from most of the guys in your dressing room?
We've been playing most nights, so there's not a ton of time to talk about it. But, you know, the NHL has their group, their player safety group, and they make the calls on these situations. And you know, I'm not one to comment on those things. They're the professionals. It's their job to make those calls. And whether they're right or wrong, you know, we're all kind of, we make mistakes. And they're able to make them too. And you know, if they drop the ball on that one, you know, I think they're hearing about it on Twitter or wherever else throughout the league, they're hearing about it. So, but, you know, I trust their ability to make the calls and make the reads and hopefully keep the players safe is the main goal there.
So it brings up this bigger conversation about fighting in the game. And as you know, especially in Canada, everybody has an opinion on it. As a guy who's currently playing, do you feel like we're in a good place with where fighting's at right now in the NHL?
I do, yeah. I think there's a place for it in the game still. You know, I think a lot of people think there isn't a place for it, but I still do. I think it's one of those loyalty things that fighting's used for a lot now is sticking up for a teammate and showing you're a good teammate, you're willing to stand up for each other. I think that's where most of the fighting's coming from these days, and that's a good place for it to come from. You know, it doesn't seem like there's meaningless fights. You know, sometimes once in a while there's those situations that are going to happen, and the game is played so fast and it's so intense and at such a high level that, you know, those things are going to happen sometimes. So, yeah, I agree. I think it's in a good place right now.
Devon, you had to play, what is it, 7 teams now, it looks like? Sorry, my math's not right. But over and over this season. It was, you know, you had to play the same teams. You didn't get to see a lot of variety. Did you feel like the emotions did start to ramp up as you're starting to get into, like, the 8th, 9th, 10th time you're playing certain teams?
Yeah, definitely. I think we finished 3 games in St. Louis there, and those ones got a little fiery and intense, and, you know, they were battling to try to lock up a spot in the playoffs there, and we were trying to battle for first place, so they're meaningful games. That's what's kind of been fun about playing a team 8 times is a lot of times these games are very meaningful within the division, and they're 4-point games, so yeah, as much as it does get annoying playing, you know, Minnesota and St. Louis and Vegas and these teams eight times, it's good hockey, and it just, most of the games feel like playoff hockey when you're playing these teams, because everyone's kind of battling to fit into four spots, and eight teams can't fit into four, so everyone's grinding a little bit harder in those games because they're just that much more meaningful.
Now, I know we're going to see a different schedule, obviously, hopefully, when next season starts, and you'll be playing everyone in the league. But did you like a little bit of the aspect, like playing a sort of baseball style in a city, maybe a team two or three nights? Did it allow you to kind of get a little settled? I know you can't go out and enjoy the city too much, but did it allow you to be a little bit more settled for those games?
Yeah, a little bit. I think playing twice in a city was fine. Three was a little bit much. Being in St. Louis for, I think, 6-7 days, there was a little bit much, a little too much time there. But, yeah, the head-to-head there, or the two games in a row there, was fine. I think players enjoyed it. A lot of times we were back-to-back, and then you go back home. So you got to spend a lot of time with family in those times as well when you were home. And then when you were away, you got to kind of settle in one spot and play a few games there. So I think they did a good job with that.
Kind of allowed you to combine your passions. I heard you were a pretty good ball player growing up, baseball guy, so it kind of mixed the two sports together, at least schedule-wise.
Yeah, and it allowed me a lot of time here, especially since season started, to watch games and catch up on baseball a little bit.
Are you a Mariners guy because you grew up out west? Are you a Jays guy because you're Canadian, or do you just support the team where you're playing?
I haven't been to a so I haven't been able to support them. Up the Mariners guy. A lot of Mariners games were broadcasted out there when I was growing up, and then I think Blue Jays kind of took over all the broadcasting rights, and so then there was a lot of Blue Jays games, and my family's big Blue Jays fans, and so I kind of support both sides of it, but it's fun watching the Blue Jays right now.
Another guy from up here, Alex Newhook, made his, well, played in the BCHL. He made his debut for you guys yesterday. Did you have any words for him before the game? Was he a little nervous at all?
Yeah, I think it just comes with the territory. First game, you feel nervous, but he's a calm kid and a great player. And he had a good game last night for us too. And that's what we're going to need down the stretch here is, you know, players stepping up, everybody pulling on the rope. And he's going to be a big part of our future in the next few years. And it was good to see him get his moment last night.
Okay, so you've got two against Los Angeles, then you're in Vegas, then you return home for two games against LA to finish the season. I know you're going to tell me you can't overlook any game, Devon, but is there like a little circle on that Vegas calendar, just knowing what that game could potentially be?
Yeah, you never know what could happen. I think they have some tough games before we play them in, I think, 4 or 5 days there. So all it takes is, you know, them to lose one, us to win a couple, and it to be, you know, a 1 or 2 point lead for them, and then we go into that building and hopefully we can take care of business. But yeah, that's a big game on our schedule right now, and you know, obviously these two LA games matter a lot to us and in order to push for that spot, so those are the ones we're focused on.
At least you can grow a playoff beard this year. Was that exciting to you in some way now that you're not part of Lou's crew and you're actually allowed to have facial hair?
No, Lou's crew, it's playoff beards. He's all for that. He loves that tradition. So that was one we were allowed to do there. But it's been a little bit easier on the face, just trimming the beard here and there during the season.
Well, what does the wife say? Because that's who ultimately gets the decision on that, unless you're on a road trip, buddy.
Yeah, she lets me know when it's time.
Hey, man, thank you very much for taking the time. I know you guys will bounce back after a loss last night in San Jose. We're looking forward to watching you play in the playoffs. A lot of people up here are pretty eager to see some other teams. We've been watching a lot of the Canadian division. Last but certainly not least, have you paid attention to what's happening in other divisions, or are you just focused night in, night out on your own?
A little bit here and there, not too much. You know, a lot of these times with how many games we're playing on days off, you don't really want to watch too much hockey, but you always check in on the scores and see what's going on in other divisions. And obviously I'm a little aware of what's happening in Abbotsford with the farm team coming there. So that's been a lot of talk amongst friend groups and whatnot as well.
Were they excited, your friends?
I think so. I think they're excited to get some hockey into Abbotsford and kind of re-energize the community, and it makes sense to put their team that close. And, you know, I know they tried with the Heat, and, you know, Vancouver fans are passionate. They don't like Calgary, and they're not going to go support their prospects. I completely understand why that didn't work, and I think this time will be better.
maybe not as excited as you in that you don't have to defend against Connor McDavid this season, at least not until you get to a conference final, if and when that happens. What a year he's had.
Yeah, he's had an incredible year, and just doing some otherworldly things up there. And we'd love to challenge ourselves against him and see what we could do against him and shutting him down. But hopefully, you know, if we see him in the playoffs, then that'll be our challenge. If not, next year we'll give it a go.
Devon, thank you very much. You've been very generous with your time again here today. All the best to you. Safety and health to you and your family as well, who I know are a little closer to us than you are right now. All the best moving forward.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
Anytime.
Thanks, Devon.
That is Devon Toews. Good interview. Very good
player.
What a
great kid.
Really good trade for the Avalanche in the offseason as well. They were able to leverage their situation with what they sent back to the Islanders, who were in a bit of a cap crunch and having to sign Matt Barzal. They would have preferred not to have given up one of their own, but these are the tough decisions you have to make. And, boy, for him, going to that loaded team already, getting big minutes, getting to play on the penalty kill, it's really allowed him to develop even further. He was good last year. He was good the year before that. But, man, he's really coming into his own with this young Avalanche team.
It's funny, Scott, because when you asked him the question about the style of play for the Islanders and the style of play for Colorado, you'd expect him to say, "Oh, I love the wide, you know, the bit more wide open style, a bit more creativity to the game." But he says he likes playing both. I mean, maybe it was he didn't want to talk bad about, you know, one situation over the other, but it's pretty interesting to hear that he likes both. I also like the fact that he didn't shy away from that Vegas game. You know, you could have got the typical, "No, you know, we're just looking at the next game on the schedule," but they understand what this game could be. So yeah, they have to take care of the Kings' first two games, but I like the fact he was honest and be like, "Yeah, that's a big game for us."
I'm not surprised by his answer about fighting whatsoever. He said he thinks it's in a really good place in the game right now. He said he understands why some people don't, but he thinks it's the right type of fighting. It's the right atmosphere for it right now. It's part of what we're asking you today. We got lots of audio to come. We've got lots of your texts to come as well. Louis DeBrusk said something today that I don't agree with. I understand why it was said, but I don't agree with it. We'll get to that in your text next on Rintoul and Sermon. You made the point yesterday, and it was a good one, and we didn't even get everything in when you were making the point. What a weird, wild, bizarre year it's been for the New York Rangers.
Right? So
think of where it started. Think of where it started. This started with Tony DeAngelo.
Like, I can't even believe that story's this year, actually, when I think about it. Like, this seems like it was a million years ago, or at least last season at this point. So you've got the Tony DeAngelo story. Then you've got Artemi Panarin. We talked a little bit about his season's been like, Scott, on this show, but he's got to go, basically, he's worried about his family in Russia because, of course, he's spoke out against Putin, and he's a supporter of the opposition of Putin, so he's worried about that. He's got to take a leave of absence. Then what else happens? Then we've got the Tom Wilson situation. Am I missing something in there? Now, all of a sudden, they send a letter to the league calling for the league to fire its Department of Player Safety head personnel, and then they fire, the next day, their general manager and their president of hockey ops, a guy, Scott, that they brought in 2019, so not very long ago, a guy that's beloved there, goes back to New York, and then they fire him unceremoniously. Like, it's crazy.
They promote Chris Drury, who was going to be destined for a general manager's job somewhere. They told him, "Hey, don't go for the Pittsburgh gig. Please stay with us." He chose to. It has certainly worked out with his promotion. I don't imagine he thought it was going to go down this way. Maybe it was supposed to happen next week or the week after. We'll see. Where are you at on fighting right now in the game? Does it need to change? Is it in a perfectly good spot right now? Do you want to see more of it? We got a lot of texts coming in. We're going to hear from a bunch of people. We haven't even gotten to the TJ Oshie story, which is a really good story in a tough circumstances for a lot of different reasons last night. And Karen, we'll get to the TJ Oshie story, but it's really interesting to me that both teams from last night's game, no matter where you're at on fighting, both teams left last night's game feeling like, "We did something for our teammates here, and we are closer as a team because of it."
Yeah, if you listen to the post-game interviews and you listen to the head coach of Dan Quinn of the Rangers, like, he was proud of his guys. He said, you know, they stuck up for each other. They stuck up for Panarin, who wasn't there. And, you know, it just showed the close-knit group that they are right now. And then when you listen post-game for the Washington Capitals, and they're speaking about TJ Oshie, like, they basically said, "We did this for him. And, you know, we knew coming in how difficult the situation was going to be for him. But he's one of us, and his loss is our loss. and we all felt it. And it's interesting, just different situations, but both teams, Scott, feel better about themselves today, and I think they both should. So back on the fighting from hockey. So Mike from Calgary texts in, the way the NHL has handled this is about as bad as it can get, makes them look like an oligarchy more than a league. Everything about this completely sucks. And I think that's to the point, Scott. I don't know if Mike in Calgary doesn't like what happened last night, but I do think the league is going to have to answer for what happened last night and whether or not that made a mockery of the system because of the fact they're going to get away with not giving Tom Wilson anything. And I think that's the biggest issue out of this.
Yeah, and you even saw game management from the Capitals last night, taking Wilson out of that game. He's got an upper body injury, and yet Peter Laviolette just missed it pretty quickly after the game. Yeah, he's going to be fine. We all know why he left, because it had become somewhat of a circus, and I think more than anything, Laviolette might have been worried that Wilson gets himself in trouble. Like, Wilson can handle himself quite fine, and we've had people texting in saying, you know what was missing? Wilson having to fight three or four times in that game. I don't think Brendan Smith was going to go fight him again. I don't think there's enough players on the Rangers, quite frankly, that would have been able to take that slot on the menu and say, yep, I'll have a serving of that. Could Tom Wilson have gone a little snaky at some point saying, look, we took care of this and gone over the line and then cost the Capitals? Yeah, I think that's entirely possible.
Well, look at what Pavel Buzhnevich did. I'm going to get that name out. Did to Anthony Mantha, Scott. Like, could you imagine if that was on a Tom Wilson and then what happens next? Like, Tom Wilson's going to lose his mind.
Well, the league's really lucky, quite frankly, that Anthony Mantha doesn't have a broken jaw or fractured face, because Buchnevich was out looking for revenge. He felt that he and his teammate had not been given true justice, and he was going to find some last night, and he found it in the form of Anthony Mantha. And yes, he should get suspended. You can't go cross-checking people in the face. Was it preventable? Absolutely. If they'd handled the Tom Wilson situation differently at league office. We'll ask Brendan Morrison if he feels the same way. He'll join us at the bottom of the hour. Let's get into a bunch of your texts here. Nick says this, fighting like what happened yesterday is a part of hockey. It should continue to be a part of it. It was not gratuitous, savage, or stupid. Having said that, you can't possibly make me think the league has reverted to the 80s. It's in balance. No one's trying to tell you that it's reverted to the 80s. There are people out there today saying we need more games like that. I don't think we do. If that is the norm, then the amount of attention that game got yesterday, it doesn't get. It really doesn't. Part of it is because it is very unique. It doesn't happen very often in today's game. So everybody wanted to know what happens next.
Yeah, and you know, Scott, this is going to, I mean, if they're going to play in the preseason, we could see something. I think there's going to be probably something that you see come start of next season. Like, this is not to be forgotten. Players have long memories, and I think in this situation, they will. I mean, I don't want to see it night in, night out, because, Scott, if I see it again, you know why I'm seeing it? Is because a player situation like what happened with Tom Wilson was missed by the league, and then another team has to, you know, figure out that they have to do frontier justice on their own. And so that's why I don't want to see it, because I don't want a situation like Tom Wilson happening again.
This text comes in. Hockey needs emotion. It is way more exciting when you have it. Way too many games lack this in today's NHL. Your World Junior analysis is brutal. I think you mean analogy, but I understand. The emotion in those games comes from so much being in online and country versus country. That emotion does not exist naturally in a regular season NHL game. Unfortunately, the best way a regular season NHL game generates this emotion is through big hits and fights. You may not like the analogy. The reason I made the analogy is this. You can get emotion from a bunch of different places. It doesn't have to be through fighting. And what the texter says at the end, unsigned, please sign your text, we'd like to give you credit. There are other ways. And part of the reason that I'm more on the side of, okay, if you want to fight, that's fine. Just hit the showers afterwards and you can come back next game. Because then you're going to decide if it's worth it. And yes, people will decide it's worth it. I see it in other sports where you're not allowed to fight or you get kicked out. And every once in a while, emotions boil to a point where you fight. So it's still going to happen in hockey. It might not happen as frequently. And if you're on the side of we need more fighting, I understand why you're going to argue against my viewpoint. But you know what people are going to do? They're going to say, okay, we need a spark in this game. I can't really get myself thrown out. I'm going to have to lay a big hit. There are still ways in a very physical game to change the momentum, to give your team a spark without it resulting in a fight time and time again. And yes, I know that fighting has been reduced.
So this comes in from Matt to 960960. Fighting in belongs in hockey. Look at Cassian and Tkachuk, two skilled players battling for the name of the game. Fun to watch. Manageable, sustainable. Where does player safety draw the line? Right now, there is none. Tom Wilson should have got more, or at least a fine for the, fine the team for his actions to make the impact from the league. And like, I look at the emotion in the Battle of Alberta. Like, Scott, when you watched, I don't know about you, remember that game a couple years ago? I mean, we have Cam Talbot and Mike Smith fighting. You know, I actually liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it was fun. But again, it was organic in how it happened, right? It's everyone's fighting and now we're going to go at each other. And it was great. And it's great for the Battle of Alberta because the next time they play, the emotions are still high. You know, Cassian Tkachuk, emotions are still high. Again, that's in the emotion of the game, though. And I don't want that taken out of it. What I want taken out of it is dirty players at times where a flip switches and they make a decision that is not good for the game. It could potentially hurt somebody. And then the league doesn't do anything about it. That's what I want out of the game.
This text comes in. The CTE risk is a good point, but you no longer have the enforcers or goons in today's NHL that fight every night. Head injuries will always be a risk with or without fights. Fights are pretty rare these days as it is. When they happen, it's usually for a good reason. Don't change it, says this texter. Yes, it's about mitigating it. It's about mitigating it. Football is not going to get rid of head injuries. Football is not going to get rid of concussions, nor is hockey. Can you diminish them? Can you lower the chance of it happening? That's really mm-hmm. what it's about. Next text. I largely agree with you both, but I think the biggest issue isn't being mentioned, says Matt in Calgary. The financial issue. This type of Bush League absurdity is what keeps the NHL a niche sport. Americans just laugh and see hockey as a joke. Fire Peros. That's the other side of this argument as well, that the reason they're talking about it is because people are laughing at it, that, oh, man, this is a bit of a circus. Not everybody agrees with that point, but there are some people that say, oh, it got all these eyeballs, it got this attention. But, yeah, how are they talking about your sport? Are they actually just kind of laughing at it, saying, can you believe this thing actually happens?
Yeah, and I guess it depends, you know, what kind of where you're asking, where you're looking, what kind of demographic you're going after. Is it a hockey casual fan just looking at the game in general? This came up, Scott, earlier in the week. I think it was Ian Mendez, who works for The Athletic in Ottawa. I saw him discuss this. This is from Keith and Kitts. Can we discuss why George Peros, a former goon, is the director of player safety? I think it should be someone like Paul Kariya, Mark Savard, or Pat LaFontaine, a star player who had his career cut short by a dirty slash dangerous stupid hockey play. And I was giving this a little bit consideration. I don't know where you stand on this, Scott, but if you go back and look at the amount of penalty minutes that the players, the people who have been the head of the Department of Player Safety have been, George Peros, Stefan Quentin, even Brendan Shanahan, who was in that role to start off with. And when Shanahan came out originally in this role, he was giving out a lot more severe suspensions than what you see right now. I do think it might take someone who has a little bit more empathy for what the possible victim comes through to have in this position. Or, you know what, Scott, it needs to be completely independent of the NHL.
Unfortunately, you're not going to be able to have someone who's independent of the NHL. You need to have the context of the game. You need to have somebody who has the context of the game. Like,
so
we
maybe
can't
someone
just take
who has
someone off the street and say, hey, you adjudicate, because the violent acts that occur in hockey, that occur in football, they would get you thrown in jail. But many of them are allowed, they're legal, and there is a fine line between, hey, what is a legal hit, and, oh, man, that occurred about a second and a half late, so we can't have that in the game because these players need to understand that there's a point where you got to let up.
I just think that maybe it's time we look at who is in the role of that position. I'm okay with what this texture is saying. I don't know if you need someone like a Mark Savard or a Paul Kariya who's sustained a career-ending injury because of a hit and concussions and CTE. And again, Paul Kariya, I don't think, wants anything to do with that. But I think there might be you need to look at maybe who's in the role.
Yes, but people think it's George Peros and George Peros alone who rules on this. It's not
no,
the case.
No, he's got a hole.
For example, Ray Whitney is a big part of that department. Well, Ray Whitney was a skilled player, smaller guy. He was on the receiving end of a lot of this, and he actually errs on the side of you've got to be able to take a hit, and you've got to prepare yourself for many of these hits. But we're talking about a skilled player who wasn't known for any of this type of thing. He's not the head of it. He's not the guy whose name goes on the statement, but there's an example of players who have been brought into the Department of Player Safety so that you have a range of viewpoints. I'm not saying for a second that this thing operates efficiently or effectively all the time. I'm not saying that at all. I am saying it's not just George Peros making an independent decision without other people weighing in.
Scott, so the reports were that he was in the building last night, right? And like, I think that league, I don't know if the league thought that like knowing he was there, it would maybe like tell these two teams like to tone it down. But apparently having him there probably didn't have the cachet that the league was hoping to. I don't know. Like, did the league expect what this was going to happen last night? They had to expect there would have been some retribution, maybe not to the extent that we see a line brawl and then, you know, 180 some odd minutes totaled up at the end of penalty minutes. But obviously George Parros being in the building did nothing to dissuade the Rangers or the Capitals for that matter.
Well, and this text comes in, typical stereotype, Parros has a degree from Harvard, does he not? Yes. And yeah, it does fly in the face of what his role is perceived to be in the National Hockey League. But I understand the point the texter is making. Let's get to what they're saying. It's loaded today. A lot of this is related to what happened last night, what's happened this week in New York. It's been the biggest talking point for hockey fans all week, and understandably so. First of all, senior advisor to the New York Rangers, though many thought that he had completely dissociated with them, Glenn Sather, you may remember him from Edmonton and New York. He's played a pretty big role over the years. While he's not the general manager or president anymore, he still has some pull in that organization. He spoke today, as did the new president and general manager, Chris Drury. First, let's hear from Sather, who is trying to tell everybody that it's simply coincidental that Gortman and Davidson are out right after this letter happens.
I was just wondering if you can just clarify once and for all, if any of the things that we've seen transpire in the last 24 hours with the GM and president's jobs had to do with the letter that was released this week with regard to player safety.
Yeah, I'll clarify that. That's an easy answer. It had nothing to do with it. Absolutely nothing.
I was born at night. It just wasn't last night, Karen. I'm not buying it. Whether it's just simply the timing or whether it was the last straw, I can buy that they were going to make this move, that James Dolan had become frustrated with the team. We can argue about whether or not that's a rational take. Most people in the hockey world think, hey, it's just over 3 years ago since the Rangers released this letter and their rebuild actually looks pretty good, but we don't own the team. He does get to make those decisions. You cannot convince me that what happened this week has nothing to do with the timing of these firings.
I agree with you, and I have some thoughts on it. Can we play the Chris Drury clip that we have? What direction do you want to take this team, Greg? Because I have some, I think when I hear that, it's going to lead into what my opinion on these two comments are.
For me, I don't think it's anything too drastic. I really, believe in what we have accomplished since the letter. We're able to do, and not only, adding young assets and making some key trades and, signing, obviously, a marquee free agent and the Breadman. So I think we do have a lot of good pieces. I think it's an exciting time for the organization. You know, just like every organization does when the season ends, we're going to take a look at everything and do what we can to, take the next step and make ourselves, a playoff team.
Okay, so why were John Davidson and Jeff Gorton fired? Because James Dolan didn't like the direction of the team? Did you not hear just what Chris Drury said? It's the exact same vision that Jeff Gorton had for where this team is going to go. Exact same vision. It's Rangers, we didn't expect to be a playoff team this season. No timeline, still in a rebuild. We're still getting there because the rebuild isn't done until you get to the playoffs and maybe become a contender. So again, if you're trying to tell me, Glenn Sather, of course, this is kind of ironic. How does Glenn Sather comes out of the woodwork and is now the talking point or talking person for James Dolan because he didn't want to be there? It's like, you cannot tell me that they're disagreement with James Dolan and the letter that he sent out has nothing to do with how this transpired yesterday. You can't tell me any of it.
Well, and maybe it's more the events of the week as well. So you're maybe not happy. So let's say you're James Dolan. You're not real happy with where you're at. Whether that's rational or not, you're playing in a really tough division this year. Like Washington, Pittsburgh, Boston, New York Islanders. Yeah. A lot of people would have said those are playoff teams before the season. The Rangers, they're 10 points back of the playoff bar in that division. If we were in a conference format, would they be hanging in around the 8 seed? Might they be the 8 seed? I can buy that. You can easily sell me on that. So this is a very unique year, and perhaps you shouldn't overreact. But if you're not happy with where your team's at, you feel like you should be a little bit ahead of that pace. If you then see your team get, whether we on the outside agree with this or not, get bullied somewhat by Tom Wilson and the Capitals, and you think, you know what? First of all, we're not good enough in the standings with the skill, and now we're not tough enough to push back. Like, if that's your feeling as an owner, and then the statement is going to be released, we're going to back our guy, and you've got two guys in your front office that you're already kind of on the fence about or made your decision on, saying, I don't think you should release that. Like, that's not a good idea. Don't do it. And Dolan going, we're doing it. And them going, okay, it's your call, but we're not really in support. Like, you add all of those things up, and you get the timing of what happened this week.
And it could be a situation, Scott, where maybe they didn't even tell Dolan that they didn't feel that they didn't like the statement. Maybe it was something where they were telling other people in the league, and it kind of got back to Dolan that it was behind their backs, his back, that it was going like, we didn't really agree with this. This is not us. Like, that's totally the ownership. That's the direction he wants to go. And maybe Dolan, I mean, we know how he doesn't like to be talked about negatively. We understand that. We've seen it with the Knicks. So, and again, maybe it's a situation where he didn't want to lose Chris Drury. He sees him as more of his guy in a way, and what will maybe listen to him, have his ear a little bit more. And I just, it's funny. I just see this Rangers team. And again, you pointed out, like, before the season started, did you have them as a playoff team? I had them as a fringe playoff team, someone that could push. And exactly what they did. They pushed until the final 2 weeks of the season. Yeah, they haven't scored a couple goals as of late. They kind of got their butts handed to them from the Islanders, which maybe didn't look good in terms of what James Dolan was looking at. But still, this team is kind of built the way you want to build a rebuild. How many teams would want this nucleus, this core, this young core? There's a few of them.
They might actually get lucky if Kaapo Kakko and Alexi Lafreniere turn into the players they think they're going to be, but it just takes them a little longer. This is a bigger discussion for another day, but if Kaapo Kakko, for example, he hasn't been as NHL-ready from an offensive production standpoint as people thought he was going to be. If he takes a little longer, like if he hits in year 4 or 5, they're going to benefit from having him on a more sweetheart contract because he took a little longer, and maybe it's the same situation for Lafreniere. We'll see. That's a bigger conversation. Dave texts in, who wrote the statement, owner or management? According to all the insiders, it was the owner. Like, this came from the owner's desk. Elliot Friedman was among those to report that. I do want to get to what Louis DeBrusk said. I teased this a little bit earlier. He was on the morning show in Vancouver today, the Oilers color man, a guy who played a heavyweight role in the National Hockey League. And this was on the issue of scrums and whether Wilson should have let up on Artemi Panarin, whether he took it past the point that he should have with a highly skilled star in the league. This was an interesting take from Louis DeBrusk. Have a listen.
And I always say this, too, and this is the other aspect of it, and people might not like it, but if you're going to go into a scrum and you're going to grab the toughest guy on the ice, you better be prepared for what's coming your way. Mm-hmm. You better be prepared for the pushback. Because I can tell you, he doesn't look at you any different than anybody else. And that's coming from a guy that played a tough guy role, a physical role in the NHL. If I go into a scrum, and this is a funny story. Craig McTavish told me one day, I went into a scrum and a not a so tough player came in and grabbed me. And after the game, he pulled me aside and he said, hey, he goes, you kind of let up on that guy. I'm like, well, you know, the guy's not really a tough guy. He doesn't, you know, he's not really, you know, he goes, yeah, but he dropped his gloves with you. He dropped his gloves with you. Mm-hmm. So therefore, he made the decision to get into that altercation with you. It's not your choice to decide whether or not he deserves your full force or not. If he decides to drop the gloves with you, then bury him. And I always thought about that, and I was like, geez, you know, that's kind of – but you know what? He's right. You're on that ice. You make the decisions on the ice. Panarin was just doing what he should do. He's a teammate. He was just trying to protect one of his teammates. Mm-hmm. I don't blame him at all for jumping on Wilson's back. He should have. It's great for him. Unfortunately, it was a smaller guy going up against a bigger guy, and he ragdolled him, and he ended up getting hurt. And that's just part of it. But again, like I said, he's the one that initiated with Wilson after what he did to Buchnevich.
So this is where I disagree. I think that's an antiquated line of thinking. I understand why McTavish told DeBrusk that. I disagree that that's the way it is. Louis DeBrusk, as a tough guy, in that moment where he let up on a smaller player in a scrum back in the day before McTavish told him that, his natural inclination was, this isn't quite right. Like, this isn't quite right. My thought is, are we going to tell players that they don't need to show restraint at all? Hey, somebody touches you, it's no holds barred. You pummel that guy. You take advantage of that opportunity. That, to me, is antiquated thinking.
Yeah, I think it's really old school way of thinking. I think back in the day, yeah, I can definitely see Craig McTavish saying that to Louis DeBrus Scott, and I definitely see Louis DeBrus taking that to heart and going about that. That's not today's NHL. Like, I go back to that Wayne Simmonds, Alex Edler hit. Like, Wayne Simmonds, did I think that should happen? No. But what did Wayne Simmonds do? He didn't pound Alex Edler. He knew this is a guy that had 950 NHL career games and had never had a fight in his entire career. Like, Wayne Simmonds knew exactly who he was fighting. He's like, Edler's got to answer the bell, but I'm not going to go there and pound him because he's not going to fight me back. He's not going to know how. So I do think that there definitely has to be the view of a smaller guy or a guy that doesn't know how to really fight that much, more skilled guy, that's just not his game. I think you have to take that in consideration when you see the guy face on face.
Someone says you took the DeBrus comments wrong. Feel free to expand. I don't think we did. DeBrus was saying that he was involved in a scrum earlier in his career and he had a smaller player who doesn't fight and he let up a little bit and he was told, nope, in that situation, you use full force. Doesn't matter who it is. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's right. And I think most players know the difference, and it comes back to one single word, respect. We continue to get into this throughout the course of the show. 960, 960, 650, 650. Brendan Morrison joins us next, as he does every Thursday. You've got it with Rintoul and Sermon. The reaction continues to pour in, and we'll get into it with Brendan Morrison a little bit here after what happened in New York this week and everything that happened last night at MSG. Mo joins us every single Thursday. He will do so again today. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. There's a bunch of stuff we haven't been able to get in here yet today because our listeners have responded to this and they continue to respond to this, and we want to get you involved in the program. We tell you that every single day. This show is for everyone. Yep. That everyone includes you. 960, 960, 650, 650. The Flames played last night and lost. It all but eliminated them from playoff contention. Not that many were holding out hope. Montreal can officially boot Calgary out tonight against Toronto. Maybe that's not likely, but that's the way it can go down. There's a way they can boot out Vancouver. Montreal can actually clinch a playoff berth tonight. So are those games at the end of the season going to be played? We've debated this. I've been on the side of, we'll see. We'll see. Maybe they take the Major League Baseball route. And, Karen, I think you've been more on the side of, no, they're going to make sure they pay their bills. They're going to play these games because they owe the sponsors, they owe the broadcast, and they don't want to have anything fall into debt.
Yeah, that's where I've been on it. I've always thought the games have been played, Scott. I am of the opinion, do they actually need to be played, though? Like, does it really matter in the end, grand scheme of things? Because here's the thing. If you're playing those three games, whatever it is, 2 weeks from now, not next week, but the week after, what else is going on? Oh, yeah, the NHL playoffs south of the border. What are you going to watch, Scott? I'm going to watch the playoff games. I know what market we're in, but if I'm going to choose to talk about something the next day or talk about a game the next day, I'm going to talk about, you know, playoff games with a ton of emotion. Like, what are those games going to have on the ice emotion-wise, too? Like, it's just, you're just playing out the stretch. I understand that you have to pay bills and you don't want to go more in debt and have to give money back or owe money, but again, what's the point? Really, what is the point? You can just go by points, like winning percentage, and figure it out that way.
You just told me what the point is, and we all know that it's the money. Like, we know that's the point. From a competitive standpoint, you're absolutely right. And forget about the lottery standings. They settled the lottery standings with points percentage last year. Like, there's a precedent in place. Bill Daly was on the Athletics podcast this week and was asked about this, whether or not it's a possibility Calgary and Vancouver do not actually finish their full schedule. And here's what he had to say.
Yeah, that's our expectation. I mean, look, we play full seasons. There's a lot of things that are triggered by teams playing less than the requisite number of games. We're not really that far outside of the window we had planned all along in terms of being within. So in that regard, I'm not sure it's any really different than a number of other scenarios we face every year with games that may not be meaningful to the final playoff picture.
Just to compare a couple of different situations. So it sounds like the game's getting played. If you were on the side of mine where you thought, maybe not, sounds like they're going to get played May 19th. Just for sake of comparison, the New York Rangers are going to finish this weekend. They're going to be done 11 days before the Flames and the Canucks. Brendan Morrison played for both of those teams. He joins us every single Thursday. He had a scheduling conflict today, but we were able to hook up with him just before the show, and is normally the case. I welcome him to the show and asked him how he was doing today.
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing?
We are well, and I'm sure you know exactly where we're going to start because it has been the topic du jour every single jour this week. It's the Tom Wilson incident. What was your reaction to what happened in the first game after you watched it a couple of times, the scrum that involved Artemi Panarin, Tom Wilson, and the incident that really got this all started?
Yeah, well, like, if at first when I watch it kind of unfold and he has Buchnevich on the ground and he's kind of like punching him in the head, I'm like, well, that's what's going on here? I mean, that guy's pretty vulnerable. And Buchnevich isn't a physical player, really, or a tough guy in that sense. And I saw Panarin come in, and I liked what Panarin did. I mean, he tried to stick up for his teammate, but, you know, he just gets absolutely ragdolled. And you can't, and some people are saying, well, maybe he didn't know who it was. Well, yeah, you do. I mean, you know, right away when you turn around and grab a guy. And I just thought it was, he crossed the line. I mean, I like Tom Wilson as far as, you know, what he brings to the table when he's playing between the lines. I mean, he's obviously a good hockey player. He plays on one of the top two lines in Washington, a highly skilled team. You know, he can skate, he can pass, he can score, and he's physical. But, I mean, he's crossed the line too many times. I mean, I thought what he did was, provoked the entire incident, you know, which happened in game two.
Absolutely. And we all know that, Brendan. And the league decided what he did wasn't quite suspendable. And there's also the issue of, look, we have to ask that question first before we take the track record into account. You've been there. Do you believe that's the way the process should work when you do have a repeat offender?
Here's the thing. Like, I mean, it's the way the game has evolved today. I mean, we all know years past that was, I wouldn't say a common incident, but something that wasn't abnormal, right? If you saw it, you're like, oh, geez. But in today's game, yes, I do think that it was dangerous. I do think that, Panarin was injured, obviously, can't finish the season. So I think that maybe the NHL did miss this one slightly. I mean, I think they could have, implemented a suspension for sure.
Yes, I agree with that. A lot of people do not. And there are a lot of people who say, well, I got a lot of eyeballs on the game last night. I certainly watched. I know a lot of other people did. Some liked what they saw, some not as much. How much of what we saw in New York last night was preventable, in your opinion, if the league acts differently?
Well, I think if there's a suspension, you don't see that. You don't see it at all. Like you said, I mean, you're going to have a handful of fans that think what happened last night was fantastic, and that's a huge part of the game. And I'm not totally against fighting in the game. I mean, I do think there's times when it has a place. That's a whole other discussion as far as, you know, guys and accountability. But I just think where the game has evolved to today, and it's this, so the speed, the skill, it's getting, I mean, it's almost archaic, you know, having the line brawls and things like that. I think it'd be a matter of time before fighting is completely removed from the game.
Brendan, you mentioned earlier about the fact that Tom Wilson knew it was Artemi Panarin that was he was going to be scrapping with. And when you, back when you were playing, like, what was the, I don't want to use the word code, but say rule, if you were in a scrum with someone or going to fight someone, like, you knew if he was not a fighter or it was a smaller guy, take it easier, or was it all just all systems go no matter who it is?
No, well, I mean, I didn't get him any scrums myself, but usually, you know, if there was, you know, incidents like that, and guys get heated for sure, but guys, some of the guys look for certain guys, right? They understand. They know who they're playing against. They know which guys are more willing to fight than other guys. And, yeah, I found there was that respect in the sense that, hey, if you weren't a guy that was, you know, known to fight or didn't have really any interest or show that, then guys would respect that. And I just think that word respect was completely lost here in that incident with Wilson.
Now, looking back just to last night quickly, Pavel Buzhnevich, of course, it looked like he was itching for something all night long, and then he gets into the Anthony Mantha incident. Mantha didn't like a hit from Buzhnevich and kind of gives him a few whacks on the legs, and then Buzhnevich comes back and cross-checks him in the face. He has a hearing with the league today. What kind of look is this for the league, though? I understand this is probably going to be a suspension, and it probably should be, but you don't punish Tom Wilson. It leads to all this, and now you're going to punish Pavel Buzhnevich, who is the one who kind of got started with this because Tom Wilson punched him in the back of the head.
Well, you know, it's almost like that incident with Buzhnevich was, I guess, somewhat premeditated just because of what happened from the night before. So I think he does get suspended for that cross check. I mean, it was pretty violent, right in Mantha's face. Yeah, I mean, like, this goes back to a lot of this could have been squashed right from the get-go, you know, and a lot of guys are going to pay the price now. I mean, it's an expensive game for Buzhnevich. He's going to get suspended. It's going to cost him a bunch of money. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously that drew a lot of attention to the game. And again, some people are going to like it, but you have a lot of people that don't like it. But yeah, I think, like we talked about, I mean, a lot of this could have been resolved with a simple suspension.
He does deserve a suspension, and it's on a tee. It's two games left in the season for the Rangers. That'll be it for Pavel Buzhnevich, I would imagine, and worry about it next season. Rangers aren't going to the playoffs. Brendan Morrison joining us here this morning, as he does every single Thursday. One more on this topic. The general perception of the hockey audience is that when there is a disciplinary situation, Tom Wilson, Buzhnevich, whoever it is, that the NHLPA ends up going into those situations, Brendan, and advocating for the perpetrators instead of the victims. You're a former player rep. Did you feel as though the PA was overly concerned with limiting discipline for those who crossed the line as opposed to advocating for those players who'd been on the other side of it?
Well, it's a bit of a balancing act for sure, because essentially you know, both of those are your clients, really, or you work for the players. I think there's times when it definitely happened where, you know, they felt the suspension was too stiff, or, you know, went to bat for that player. And then I do think there were times, though, when, you know, the victim was hurt and, you know, they had to obviously talk about that and the outcome. But I would say you're right, Scotty, more times than not, they're trying to, you know, limit the suspension or the punishment of the perpetrator.
So the other thing that's come into question this week is the amount you can fine a player. Because Wilson gets a $5,000 fine. We all know relative to his salary, that's not a big deal, and people compare it to other leagues. The players are always going to fight against having big fines doled out for disciplinary situations, and yet something like this occurs, and I think, well, most people would have preferred a suspension here. If you're not going to suspend, it feels like you should be able to monetarily punish Tom Wilson to a further extent than they have. Will the players ever sort that out?
I think that's something to look at for sure. I mean, I think the max fine you can get right now is $5,000. And I think with all the combinations of suspension that Wilson's had over his career, I think he's up to about $1.2 million he's paid. I mean, that's pretty hefty. That's a lot of money. But I do think that will be on the table or on an agenda to talk about is raising that maximum amount of suspension. Because, I mean, that will deter guys, I think, if you get into numbers up, I guess, like the NFL and things like that, where it seems substantially higher.
Brendan, I don't know if you know TJ Oshie personally at all, but he scored a hat trick last night in his first game back since the passing of his dad. I don't know, again, if you've been in a situation like this personally or with a member of your team, but were there any emotions stirred up watching that last night?
Yeah, you know, I don't know him personally, but I've heard nothing but great things about him. And you know, when I saw that last night, it kind of made me think about when they won the cup, because I do remember when they interviewed him after the game, and he gave a great interview about his family and in particular his dad, because I think even at that time his dad wasn't doing very well. That was a couple years ago, and that was kind of cool. Like, you know, you just kind of endeared yourself to him. You know, I believe he also has one of his kids has a bit of a disability. So a guy that he just seems like such a good guy. Does a lot of great things for great causes, and to able to have a game like that in that moment, I guess was fantastic to see.
Okay, let's switch a little bit to the teams that are up here north of the border. Canucks and Flames. Flames and Canucks are actually mathematically not eliminated yet. However, they're just playing out the rest of the season. It's only a matter of time. What motivation do you find for the final stretch of the season for these players, especially when it's probably a season where the players just want it to be over?
Yeah, I mean, it's not enjoyable at all. I mean, as a player, it's especially in the Canadian market, it's almost embarrassing. Like, you don't want to even go out in public or be seen. I think a bit of a saving grace is they don't have fans in the building this year for the last couple of games. But I mean, these guys, a lot of them are playing for jobs. I mean, some younger guys are getting additions here. But, you know, just pride, respect. I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen with both of these organizations moving forward. So there's a lot of questions, you know, in a lot of different parts of the organization. So, I mean, guys need to go out and be professional. And it comes down to showing your character. I mean, you know, everybody, you know, can put their best foot forward when things are going well and you're rolling. But I think true character really kind of shines through when things aren't going your way and you're having a difficult time and you know, what kind of person shows up and how do you perform and how do you treat your teammates and the organization. So I think that's going to be key for a lot of these guys.
So here's the difficult aspect of that, Mo, and I'm going to use a baseball analogy here because I've heard baseball executives in the past say, well, we can't trust anything we see in April or September because it might just be a hot stretch in either of those portions of the season where it doesn't feel like the games mean as much. That's kind of where we're at with hockey, and yet you do see players audition. So how do you separate the steak from the sizzle, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right. I mean, there's always a chance it could just be a real small sample size and, you know, a bit of an anomaly. But I think for the most part, I mean, you know, management has a pretty good read on their players and what type of people they are. And they can tell how they react and the body language on the ice, you know, compete level, all these things. And that all speaks to guys' character. So, I mean, it's even though these games are essentially meaningless, I mean, I do think that you can still, you know, read into what a guy's all about.
Who's got a tougher job, Brad Treliving or Jim Benning, assuming both of those guys are the men at this, at the control switch and trying to get things right for next season with their respective teams?
Yeah, I mean, they're both going to take quite a bit of heat or have been taking heat. I mean, going into the season, I really did like both rosters. I mean, I think, you know, the question mark in Van was a bit of their goaltending, and it was a slow start, but I think that was rectified with Demko, and then, you know, Hopi played well here the last little while. And in Vancouver, in Calgary, just, I mean, their depth was good, I thought. They just couldn't put it together at all. Like, they got good goaltending when the team wasn't playing well, and maybe when the team was playing well, they weren't getting great goaltending. I mean, there's a lot of different things that go into it, but yeah, I mean, they're going to have their hands. Well, I do think that some culture has to change in Calgary a little. We've had that same kind of leadership for a long time. But again, I think Brad had a good job of bringing in some pieces there. I think they do have to tinker with it a bit. And I think Vancouver does have a bright future. They do have a great young core of players. And you know, their schedule maybe wasn't the most favorable this year with the way they started. And then having the protocols in place and all these games piled up. I mean, that's very, very difficult.
Brendan, one more question for myself. The Ottawa Senators are now tied with the Flames at 57 points. Calgary a couple of games in hands, but Ottawa can finish fifth in this division, probably something no one predicted earlier in the season. We knew they'd be pesky. We use that term a lot. They've embraced the sickos thing this season. But what do you like about how Ottawa plays and played this season?
Well, you know what I like about their team right now, and I think they have points in 8 of the last 10 or 9 of the last 11 or something like that, is it looks like they're having fun. Like, you watch these guys on the ice, they're a young group of guys. As a young player, I mean, the only way you're going to get better is if you play. And all these guys are getting opportunities to play. Their young guys are getting power play minutes. They're getting penalty killing minutes, a lot of minutes, 5-on-5. And they really have nothing to lose. Like, they have no pressure on them. Nobody, like you said, expected them to have a great season. Everyone picked them to finish last in the North. And they've kind of embraced, a little bit of a spoiler role. And their smile. These guys genuinely look happy for one another when they're winning games and when scoring goals. And, you know, I think they need a couple more years of seasoning for sure. But, I mean, they got a lot of nice pieces in place there.
I think we're all looking forward when we can get together with a group and have fun again. That would be fantastic. I think we're all just crossing our fingers for that, like the Ottawa Senators are, whatever the setting. Mo, thank you very much for doing this morning. Keep you and yours safe and healthy, and we will talk again in a week's time.
You too, guys. Have a great weekend.
Ottawa Senators are an interesting story, and it does come down to, hey, how do you evaluate this relative to the context of expectations? There's a lot of good stories for Ottawa. Does that mean they're ready to take a big step next season? I don't know. I do know this, that if you take Edmonton out of the equation, and that's easy to say, just cherry pick one team, but Edmonton was so dominant against Ottawa. If you take Edmonton out of that team's record, 3 games over NHL 500. Ottawa is 3 games better than NHL 500, and that includes games against Vancouver, where that season series swung in the way of the Vancouver Canucks. Despite what happened at the end, they had far more wins against Ottawa than the other way around. Ottawa, 21-18-5 against every team not named Edmonton this season.
They're also, Scott, they're the second best record in the NHL since April 17th, 7-1-1 in their last 9 games. They've outscored their opponents 30-15 in that time. And I was looking a little bit at their roster, Scott. No, do I think they're going to be a playoff team next year when they put everything back together in terms of divisional alignment? No, I don't think so. I highly doubt it. But they've got, like, the nucleus there. Like, look at what they've got. Shabbat's 24. Zub, he's a little bit older, but he's 26. Victor Mete, of course, they picked up on waivers, 23. Branstrom, 22. Stutzla, 19. Kachuk, 21. Formanton, 22, Pinto, 20, Norris, 22, Batherson, 23. Like, the core of these guys are all the same age, and they're all kind of going through the same growing pains at the same time. They also look like they're having a lot of fun together right now.
Yeah, they're having a lot of fun. Brendan Morrison just pointed that out. How much of it means they can get to be a playoff team, any of those sort of things? I don't know. I do feel validated in not taking an L on the Senators earlier, because I was one of those who came into this season saying they're going to be a lot tougher out than people think. And then they went through the 9-game losing streak early in the season. And I can remember having the conversation with Jamie on air of, I might have to sign up for an L on the Ottawa Senators. I don't look good right now. I'm glad I waited on that. I didn't end up having to take an L. Thank you, sickos. You made me look better. And I think most people had that opinion. But I'll tell you the opinion that all of us had that might not play out. Toronto's going to be at the top, and Ottawa's going to be at the bottom, even though they're going to be a tougher out. Ottawa might not be at the bottom. They might be a couple rungs up.
Like, Ottawa's could finish fifth. And I'd mentioned that to Brendan Morrison there. Like, they are tied with Calgary Flames right now in points at 50, where is it here? At 47 points. And I know Calgary has a couple games in hand, and we'll see what happens down the stretch against Vancouver, but there is a scenario where the Ottawa Senators finish fifth in this division, and nobody had that happening. As in, nobody had probably Calgary where they are in the situation. Vancouver, I think a lot of people probably had them fighting for that fourth spot in terms of where they'd be start of the season till now, but nobody had Ottawa as possibly fifth in this division. Good on them. Good on DJ Smith. Good on playing the kids and seeing what happens. They have a ton of skill, and it looks like they've kind of figured out a bit of their goaltending as of late, but yeah, good on them.
Skill versus will. It was a big topic of conversation this week surrounding the New York Rangers. So many of you want to get in on this. You're continuing to pile into the inbox, so we'll get your comments on the air next. We will touch on what was a great story last night in that same game, and it's something that did bring the Washington Capitals together, and the hockey world poured its heart out as well. That's next on Rintoul and Sermon.